Today is Monday, July 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, China's central government said Monday that media organizations have been stoking public panic over amendments to Hong Kong's extradition bill. Also, Iran's powerful Revolutionary Guard released a video showing purported radio conversations between its naval force and a British warship escorting UK-flagged tankers in the Strait of Hormuz.
British warship Foxtrot 236, this is Sepanevi Solbor. Don't put your life to danger.
Those stories and more are all coming up next. China's central government said Monday that media organizations have been stoking public panic over amendments to Hong Kong's extradition bill. The bill, which has been shelved by the Hong Kong Legislative Council, sparked wide press anger and weeks of mass demonstrations. For more on the protests and what may be coming next for the special administrative region, I recently spoke with Hong Kong-based journalist Aaron Hale. I started our conversation by asking Aaron if Beijing's assertions that Hong Kong residents didn't understand the law or the legal and judicial system in China, if that was accurate.
I would say no. Hong Kongers, you know, they do have access to the internet. It's basically the same level of information available in any Western country. So they've been watching for a long time what's happening in China, including 1989. When there were mass protests here in support of the democracy movement. So I think they're pretty savvy as to what's happening and the differences with China. You had also the disappearance of booksellers from Hong Kong to China a few years ago. You've had, tycoons kidnapped from their hotel rooms in Hong Kong and taken over to the mainland. So they have a lot of reasons to be afraid.
If we take a look at the current protests, which have been going on for almost 2 months now, what do you see the protesters doing next? Because we have seen this escalation of violence these last few weeks.
That's a very good question. They have another month of protests planned. Where this will head is uncertain. The Hong Kong police apparently may start deploying water cannons, which could escalate things. But I think people are really going to keep going out in the street because every time there's a lull, which happened recently, you have these situations of violence, like the protesters being attacked by triad members, and this just sort of like reignited things all over again. So we're probably going to be in a cycle of, intense protest, a lull. And, October 1st is, we have two flashpoints coming up. One is, the fifth anniversary of the Umbrella Movement, and then another is October 1st, which is China's National Day. And it's very typically a big day of an anti-China demonstration here, and it usually gets 100,000 people maybe, but that's going to be a big one.
Where do protesters see, an end game, the end to the need to continue to have protests?
Well, part of the complication of this is the protests aren't really about extradition anymore. They've kind of become about something greater. The protesters do have additional demands now. They want Carrie Lam to step down. They want her to say formally that the bill is dead. She said it's technically dead, but not officially dead. And they also really want to see a police inquiry into, or an independent inquiry into the use of police violence. So I don't think these protests are really going to change until Hong Kong starts making some concessions. But it's very possible that Beijing is blocking them from doing that.
You mentioned that there is a resurgence of pro-democracy elements to these latest protests. What can you tell us about what is different about these series of protests as to the ones a few years ago that were colloquially called the Umbrella Movement?
They're very different. The entire move of the protests is 100% different. Those protests in 2014, that was people occupying roads and parks for several weeks. It had a very calm vibe. It was very peaceful. You had protesters, they set up homework stations. They had garbage sorting stations. They really were, it was almost like some sort of 1960s vibe to them. Whereas now, the police came in very hard and very fast. So these protests are much angrier and much more violent. And you have, protesters digging up bricks last night to throw at police or to defend themselves. And, they're using shields that they've made themselves to, ward off tear gas. So these protests feel much more like almost a battle, whereas 2014, for the most part, in most places, felt like a sort of a sit-in.
That's reporter Aaron Hale speaking to me from Hong Kong. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said talks between Iran and the United States would be possible if based on an agenda that could lead to tangible results, but insisted Washington was not seeking dialogue. U.S. President Donald Trump has said he is willing to hold talks with the Islamic Republic. The remarks came on the same day that Iran's Revolutionary Guard released a video showing purported radio conversations between its naval force and a British warship escorting UK flag tankers in the Strait of Hormuz.
British warship Foxtrot 236.
British warship Foxtrot 236, this is Sepah Navy patrol boat. You are required not to interfere in this issue.
Sepah Navy patrol vessel, this is British warship Foxtrot 236. I am in vicinity of an internationally recognized strait with a merchant vessel in my vicinity conducting transit passage.
British warship Foxtrot 236, this is Sepah Navy patrol boat.
Don't put your life to danger.
Later pictures in the video show the British flag Stena Imperno oil tanker being seized in the Strait of Hormuz a week ago, along with a radio conversation between the crew of the warship and Iranian officers. The Stena Imperno is still docked in the port city of Bandar Abbas near the Strait of Hormuz, and all of its 23 crew members are in the Revolutionary Guard's detention. Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny has been discharged from a Moscow hospital where he was being treated for an unexplained health problem and returned to prison under guard. The Russian opposition leader was hospitalized on Sunday after suffering an acute allergic reaction, which one doctor said may have been the result of him being poisoned with an unknown chemical substance. Reuters' Emily Wither has that story.
Navalny took ill on Sunday night after suffering from what appeared to be an acute allergic reaction. He had severe swelling of the face and skin redness. But one doctor said the lawmaker may have been poisoned with an unknown chemical substance. His supporters gathered outside the hospital, only to be detained shortly after, with police picking up at least 12 people, including journalists. Navalny was taken to hospital from his prison cell, where he's serving a 30-day sentence, charged with violating tough protest laws. It's after he called for this protest at the weekend. Police in Moscow detained more than 1,000 people for illegally demonstrating. They were demanding that members of the opposition be allowed to run in a local election later this year. Navalny, a lawyer and anti-corruption activist, has served several stints in jail in recent years for organizing anti-government demonstrations. A doctor at the hospital treating him says Navalny had been diagnosed with hives and that he was feeling better. But others say his condition is suspicious, especially given he has never suffered from allergies in the past.
That was Reuters reporter Emily Wither. Britain warned the European Union Monday it needed to change its stubborn position on Brexit if a no-deal exit was to be avoided. Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab said he wanted a deal, but the EU had to change its position.
I think what people want to know above all is the reassurance, first of all, that we're going to get Brexit delivered by the end of October. That's the massive trust issue here, if you want to frame it in those terms. And secondly, that whilst we want a good deal with our EU friends and partners, it must abolish the undemocratic backstop. And of course, the no-deal planning is important both for preparing for that eventuality, but also sending the clearest signal to our EU friends and partners. And that gives us the best shot of getting a deal which we want.
Raab said the last deal was defeated by the biggest margin in parliamentary history and led to the resignation of Theresa May. He said there must be some change on the part of the EU. The U.S. and China are reviving trade talks Tuesday, but the hopes for a significant progress are low. The AP's Charles de Ledesma reports.
2 months after US-Chinese talks aimed at ending a tariff war broke down, both sides are trying to temper hopes for a breakthrough. Negotiations resume this week when American trade officials meet a Chinese delegation in Shanghai. They're expected to touch on an array of disputes that has grown to include tension over Chinese tech giant Huawei and the control of technology. Hopes of a breakthrough are low, though. On Friday, President Donald Trump said he didn't know if they're going to make a deal and he doesn't care, repeating his claim that the US is prospering. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Here are some other top stories from around the world. Chinese dissident Huang Qi has been sentenced to 12 years in prison on the charge of leaking secrets to a foreign entity more than 2 years after his arrest. U.S. President Donald Trump has announced his National Intelligence Chief Dan Coats is resigning after 2 years on the job and frequent policy clashes with the White House. The White House belittled Democratic lawmakers who are continuing to advance the case for impeaching the president. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on our website, voanews.com, and with our VOA mobile app. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. At least 65 people died in an attack by suspected Islamists on a group returning from a funeral in Nigeria's northeastern Borno region, state television reported on Sunday. One of the deadliest attacks on civilians in recent years, Reuters' Jason Albano reports.
This is Science in a Minute.
The popularity of smartphones has been increasing, especially among young people. They are depending on these mobile devices for communicating with each other, catching up on the latest news and information, as well as entertainment. Studies conducted in recent years have provided evidence that increased smartphone use can be linked with reduced physical activity. A new study presented at the recent 2019 American College of Cardiology Latin America Conference suggests young people who use a smartphone for 5 or more hours a day have a 43% increased risk of obesity. The study authors found the young people they studied who use their smartphone for more than 5 hours each day are also most likely to have other lifestyle habits that boost the risk of cardiovascular disease, like having a diet of fast food, consuming drinks sweetened with sugar, and being less physically active. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
I'm Steve Miller in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. 65 people have died in an attack by suspected Islamists in Nigeria's northeastern Borno region. Reuters' Jason Albano has that story.
Scores of people have been killed in Nigeria in one of the deadliest attacks on civilians in recent years.
They attacked them at the graveyard.
A local official said that the victims were returning from a funeral in the northeastern Borno region when they were attacked. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but Boko Haram and rival Islamic State in West Africa are known to attack the area. Borno State Governor Babagana Umaru Zulum expressed his condolences to the victims.
Personally came here to condole them. I sincerely sympathize with the families, and may Almighty Allah in his infinite wisdom admit them to Jannatul Firdaus, and may the families bear the fortitude of this irreparable loss.
President Buhari condemned the attack in a statement and directed the military to hunt down the perpetrators. The conflicts in Borno have lasted a decade. Militants have killed thousands, and millions more have fled from their homes.
That was Reuters reporter Jason Albano. Afghan authorities say a car bombing gun attack in Kabul has killed at least 20 people and injured 50. Officials and witnesses said several heavily armed suicide bombers stormed a compound housing the office of Afghanistan Green Trend, a political movement headed by the country's former spy chief, Amrullah Saleh. The incident occurred just after hours after President Ashraf Ghani and Saleh attended an election rally in Kabul as the official campaign to re-elect a new president in Afghanistan kicked off on Sunday. There was no immediate claims of responsibility for the attack. New terror legislation to stop foreign fighters from returning to Australia has been approved by lawmakers. The government says the new laws will prevent carnage in Australia. Phil Mercer reports that experts say the exclusion measures will apply mostly to women and children and will increase the risk of radicalization.
Australian government officials say the new law will give intelligence agencies time to manage the flow of foreign fighters back to Australia. It will allow the government to exclude an Australian citizen for up to 2 years if they're considered to be a security risk. It's estimated that 230 Australians travelled to Iraq and Syria to fight with militant groups. About 40 are thought to have returned home, raising fears that they've brought home not only a dangerous ideology, but combat skills. Government lawmaker Andrew Hastie said returning militants brought with them hard hearts and a proven capacity for violence and bloodshed. Australia says the new measures are similar to those in Britain. Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton says the laws will make Australia safer.
The government now is asking for the support of this Parliament to introduce legislation to temporarily exclude those people who we believe would come to our country to cause death and carnage in Australia.
The new laws to ban foreign fighters from returning to Australia will mostly apply to women and children, many of whom are held in refugee camps. That's according to Michelle Grossman, an authority on violent extremism who works with the Australian Federal Police. She says forcing people to stay in poor conditions in camps puts them at greater risk of developing resentment against Australia and of greater radicalisation. The Law Council of Australia, the country's leading advocacy group for lawyers, says the law could be unconstitutional. It will take effect next month. Dutton has said repatriations would be decided case by case, particularly where young children were involved. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the largest survey of views on corruption in Africa reveals that more than 50% of citizens across 35 African countries believe corruption is getting worse. An in-depth look at corruption on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show.
I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it, yeah.
Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Democratic Party presidential candidates will try to distance themselves from their rivals as they jockey for position in Democratic debates in Detroit this week. Mike O'Sullivan reports that progressive standard bearers Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren will share the stage on Tuesday, and frontrunner Joe Biden will fend off attacks Wednesday as 10 of 20 candidates square off on each of the two nights.
With a clear but shrinking lead in the polls, former Vice President Biden, with other candidates, paid visits last week to African American civil rights groups. Still dominating the news were comments by U.S. President Donald Trump aimed at four minority members of Congress, which Democrats widely criticized as racist. Race became an issue in the Democratic contest when California Senator Kamala Harris questioned Biden's record in debates in Miami in June. They aired on NBC News. One analyst tells VOA to expect more fireworks.
This may be the final chance for a lot of those 20 candidates to make their mark, and the way to do that is by mixing it up with the front runners, being aggressive, and really attacking them.
Biden has also come under attack for supporting a tough 1994 crime bill, which Harris says contributed to the mass incarceration of minorities. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker has echoed the charge, and trailing in the polls may revisit the question. Another analyst says voters want to hear about economic issues.
I think they need to focus on issues like health care, or on education policy, or on job creation.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who ranks second in most polls, is struggling to keep his lead over fellow progressive rival Elizabeth Warren, a senator from Massachusetts.
We need a presidential campaign which energizes and excites the American people.
The debate offers a chance for the candidates to speak directly to voters, as they will in coming months, in smaller events around the country. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Behind closed doors.
From mobile phones, tablets, and laptop computers to all the different types of social media out there, modern-day society as a whole is distracted in ways it never has been before. Scientists have noticed that as technology becomes more prevalent, people are also getting fatter. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the details on a new Rice University study examining whether there is a link between technology habits and obesity.
Have you ever been on different social media pages and wondered, where did the time go? Cognitive neuroscience and psychology researcher Richard Lopez says this type of mindless multitasking on various digital devices is linked to obesity.
We see a pretty interesting bump in rates of obesity and in childhood obesity around the same time, just as phones switched from flip phones to smartphones and you had technological developments with phones in general.
Researchers surveyed 132 university-age adults from 18 to 23 years old. The survey asked participants questions such as how often are they distracted by notifications on their phone. Researchers also measured the participants' body fat.
We found that those who reported multitasking more frequently with their devices had higher risk for obesity as measured by BMI and percent body fat.
Then 72 of the participants underwent brain imaging while being shown unrelated images, including fattening foods. The results? The people who media multitasked more when exposed to tempting food cues showed different patterns of brain activity.
We found a relationship whereby those who are high in media multitasking had more reward-related activity in those brain systems that drive eating behavior, less activity in other prefrontal regions that help with self-control. I would not be surprised, I'll say, if high media multitaskers also struggle with other temptations in other domains.
Researchers do not know whether people who tend to multitask with digital devices lack self-control, and as a result, their brain development is affected, or whether people with specific patterns of brain development have more of a tendency to multitask with their devices. Lopez says more studies that track people over time is needed to see whether obesity drives mindless multitasking with digital devices, or whether people who switch between devices become obese over time. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
Yemeni officials say an airstrike by the Saudi-led coalition hit a market in northern Yemen, killing at least 10 civilians, including children. They say the strike took place Monday in the Sada province, a stronghold of Iran-aligned rebels known as Houthis. The coalition has been battling the rebels on behalf of an internationally recognized government since 2015 in a war that has killed tens of thousands of people. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to brief the media. There is no immediate comment from the coalition, and VOA has not been able to independently verify the information. But as events become clear, we will have an update for you on our VOAnews.com website. Before I go, we'll take a quick look back in history. It was on this date in 1914. The transcontinental telephone service in the United States became operational with the first test conversation between New York and San Francisco. Massachusetts Cape Cod Canal, offering a shortcut across the base of the peninsula, was officially opened to shipping traffic as well. And that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of our director, Jackson Mungavi, engineer Andreas Regis, and managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, thank you so much for joining us. Now, for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow VOA on social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, with our VOA mobile app, you can download our stories and take them with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a magnificent Monday.